Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
So, you know, Matt, I have been obsessed with reconciliation and the debt limit and the negotiating tactics of the progressives and what's up with Sinema and Manchin. And you're doing this whole other podcast thing where you're talking, you've gone like neck deep in culture war stuff. So I was going to, I do want to talk debt limit, you know, cause that's still yeah. Where my head is at.
No, that's cause you're in it for clickbait. Nothing but that debt limit stuff is nothing but clickbait and salacious, you know, buzz. And I know the game you're playing to try to get viewers and clicks, it's not going to work here.
I will say this. I haven't watched the new Dave Chappelle Netflix thing. I did read the controversial quotes, and I have my good opinions on the subject. But you've been talking about this stuff on your podcast/YouTube show, yes.
Yeah. I just had Katie Herzog from the Blocked and Reported podcast on, who has been called transphobic and a TERF. We talked about it on the YouTube and podcast, and I'm gonna later today release my interview with Robbie Suave, where we touch on this the cancel culture stuff, certainly.
So I know, Matt, you have been, you were in general opposed to cancel culture.
Yeah.
In your mind, is there anything about, so is this Chappelle situation in your mind just another example of cancel culture, or is there something different about this?
Well, I just think that, you know, comedy is one area where we should really be open to people saying outrageous things for comedic purposes and challenging us and challenging. And look, I mean, Chappelle says lots of things that I don't agree with or don't necessarily like, and a lot of comedians do, but you laugh at them. Some of them are meant to poke fun at you, the viewer, and not necessarily other people even. But I think that we have lost our ability, our tolerance for this, for joking about things. And I think there needs to be an outlet, you know, like a purge, like an outlet for, we live in now such a most puritanical society in some ways in terms of like the political correct rules. The rules are very different, right? When we were kids, there were certain ridiculous rules like, you know, I Love Lucy, a show which literally had Desi Arnaz, the husband, spank the wife when she was naughty. And yet they had two different beds. It was ridiculous. Desi and Lucy had to have two separate beds that they slept in. Like, those were silly rules that, like, somebody said that those were the rules. Now we have other rules that are, like, you know, arbitrary and ridiculous. But if you break those rules, you will get canceled. And I think Chappelle is the only person maybe left in America who has, like, I'm being a little bit, you know, whatever. But Chappelle is one of the few people who has, like, the cachet and the money and the ability, and even the fact that he's an African American, I think, gives him a little more leverage and a little more space to take on some of the taboos and some of the sacred cows of our 21st century political correct culture. So I found it to be kind of refreshing to watch this comedy special.
You watched it?
I've probably watched it three times now.
So let me ask you this. When he's talking about transgender people and he's saying gender is a fact, which is basically saying that people who are transgender are not really the gender that they say they are, that they're only the gender which they are born as.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know that he says that, to be honest.
The quote is gender is a fact, right?
I don't remember him saying that. He might have, I know that there is a dispute as to like what is are sex and gender different? Like, is sex a fact and gender is how you feel?
I
But
mean,
I don't know
he's.
that. I know that he does say, I'm looking at my notes here because I actually took pretty extensive notes on this. He's defending at one point J.K. Rowling, and who said something to that effect
Yeah,
and got in trouble for
I mean
it.
the
And
whole.
he says they started calling J.K. Rowling a TERF. I didn't even know what that was, but I know that trans people make up words to win arguments. That I thought was an interesting point. Like, it was funny. His delivery's funny. I'm not going to try to impersonate him. That wouldn't work. But he sort of is right that they do make up words to win arguments, right? And probably
Well,
everyone does.
one. I mean, here's my point, Matt. These aren't jokes. He's making a political argument.
Okay, but George Carlin, was George Carlin a comedian? Was Lenny Bruce a comedian? I mean, I will concede that in many ways this is a political argument with jokes throughout. But I think that that actually makes it better, not worse.
I
It's not
mean,
an indictment on it.
look, I mean, people can enjoy whatever, content they want to enjoy, but saying you're a comedian, that you're making jokes is not a shield to protect you from saying whatever awful thing you want to say.
I mean, what do you want? Do you want him to get up there and do like knock-knock jokes or like,
Look, come on, let's be plain here. People who are transgender are at risk of suicide because they are treated like they are somehow monstrous. And if you are putting forth the idea on a very public platform, your most prominent cultural figures in America, saying, that you're masquerading as something that you are not. You're pretending you are a gender that you are really not, and you should only be whatever, genitalia you are born with, and that should determine what your gender and what you say is wrong. Like that has real consequence. I mean, I'm not saying you should be thrown in jail. I'm not saying the First Amendment doesn't apply here, but you are subject to critique for your words, and if your words are harmful, I don't think the retort is, well, I'm just a comedian. You're not being a comedian there.
Right, but I don't think Chappelle really spent much time on that. I mean, it's much more nuanced than what you're describing. Now, he does have a line where he says something to the effect of every one of us, I'm paraphrasing here, like every one of us pass through the legs of a woman, and that like that's a thing. Women are,
But
and I will say like the idea that like men can have babies. Like, at some point it becomes a semantic argument. Do you mean the gender you were assigned at birth or yada yada yada? But Bill, I think that you're really unfairly simplifying. I mean, Chappelle, this is like an hour and
I'm sorry, Matt. Dave Chappelle. So Dave Chappelle is trying to put himself up as I'm the arbiter of truth and honesty. I'm going after sacred cows and telling you the real story. These transgender people make up words to win arguments. But when I say everybody was born past the legs of a woman, I'm just telling the truth. I mean,
Bill, wait.
there's just one point. These people assert things,
Yeah.
say they're truth, say that they're incontrovertible fact, but they.
Do you believe that men can have babies?
There are people who are born with uteruses and vaginas who
Okay,
don't feel.
we call them women,
Well,
is
some
what we've
people
done throughout my whole
don't.
life.
Well, some people don't. Some
Okay.
people feel at
Okay.
a very, very young age
Sure.
that they're not women.
Now,
And I and I and
can't com but
here,
can't comedy talk we're
but
having this discussion.
this is not comedy. There is nothing funny about these observations. They are
Bill,
political points, and they
we
are
have to
subject
be
to
able
critique. And for Dave Chappelle to say, What you do in your argumentation is sophistry. And what I say is incontrovertible fact, that's sophistry in and of itself. And because you say it's a joke doesn't negate that fact.
Okay, but we have to be able to, in a society, joke about things, talk about things, and argue about things. And I think that's healthy. And I think that Chappelle is involved in this, I think, thing that we do in America, which is challenge things, laugh about things, wrestle with ideas, talk about things. And other people are free to get up and do a political speech or a stand-up routine that differs with him.
He's allowed to do it. But if his arguments are bad, and if he's trying to say, I'm the only person with the good arguments, and everybody else has the bad arguments, and if you criticize me, well, you're just making up words, he's subject to critique for those words. He doesn't get a pass because he's a comedian.
Sure. But so J.K. Rowling, who's this obviously very wildly successful author of the Harry Potter books, said something to the effect of, sex is real. Like, men are men, women are something to that effect. I don't want to misquote her, but it was something like that. And there was an attempt to cancel her, like that what she said was so outrageous. Instead of being tolerant and saying, well, she has the right to say that, but I disagree, or like that's her opinion, but she doesn't understand the nuance of this. Like, there was an effort to kind of take her down, just like there's an effort. And again, I think Dave Chappelle can survive things that Matt Lewis couldn't survive. If Matt Lewis said some of these things, I think they would cancel me. Chappelle can survive it for a variety of reasons. But what happened is when she said this, when J.K. Rowling said this, they basically called her a TERF, which most people have no idea what it even means. Trans exclusionary.
Radical feminist.
There you go. Thank you, Bill. And so now they've labeled it. Now it's homophobic comedian Dave Chappelle, right? I mean, like, that becomes part of you, and it's an effort to shame you and to label, basically to label you as someone who is an enemy of the people, so to speak.
Well, these people are being enemies of transgender people and saying that who they feel they are inside is false.
No,
and there are children that are harmed by that.
So there are also children who are. I have a friend who I'm not going to mention any names, but I was talking to a friend of mine who's a little kid that goes to like elementary school somewhere, and not allowed to talk about his parents because they're not parents; they're your adults, or I forget what the term is, but you can't call them your parents or your dad. You can't call it your dad. And every once in a while, the kid is told, and this is like, I'll be the first to admit, like, this is anecdotal, but it's true. Someone that I know just told me this, and this is not a radical, crazy, right-wing person. His kid is told, like, how do you feel today? Today, do you feel like a boy today or a girl today? If you feel like a girl today, go to this. This is like a four-year-old kid, Bill.
Well, Matt.
You know, so who is playing offense here and who is playing defense, right? And the thing is, here, let me just, I know I'm mm-hmm. filibustering here. I'll say one more thing and then I promise I'll shut up for 5 minutes.
All right.
I don't care if you feel like a man or a woman or whatever, but it's when, like, if I don't use your preferred pronoun, I'm the one who's in trouble. And Chappelle talks about
you should be the one in trouble. Now, if I tell you who I am, have the decency to respect that. Whatever your personal feeling is, this is who I am. And there is scientific research. I mean, so let's start with actual facts here. There is scientific research that gender identity manifests as young as age 3. And I can say anecdotally, I know kids like that. I know kids in my own community who clearly were expressing gender identity different than their born genitalia. And I happen to live in a community that's very respectful of that. And I see kids being able to live their lives, transgender kids being able to live their lives very happily because of it. And to throw out I'm sure there are certain examples that can be thrown out where someone wasn't allowed to say this word or that word and someone wasn't comfortable, whatever. But it is just a plain fact that transgender kids are at high risk of suicide because there are people putting out messages in the culture that what they feel they are is wrong. Yeah. And to not to treat this issue with that level of sensitivity, I find very offensive. Yeah. I mean, if you have a different view on the subject, you want to talk about it. And I mean, I agree with you, Matt. People should be allowed to talk and have opinions and wrestle with things. That's all fine. But if you're going to be Dave Chappelle and take, I mean, this is not this is not having a civil conversation. This is like taking a howitzer. He is on a Netflix platform, a guy who gets one of the most traffic of anybody in the country to give a one side argument that is not based in fact. To and then say, well, I'm just a comedian. So if you're trying, if you criticize me, you're trying to cancel me. When of course he's uncancelable at this point. I mean, that's not having a civil conversation.
Well, I mean, first, a lot of people are targets of stuff. I mean, the South Park guys did a whole musical like making fun of Mormons, and I mean, just like we live in a messy, messy, messy country where people are allowed. And this used to be a liberal thing, by the way. Where you could voice the diverse opinions, you could make fun of people, you could even sometimes engage in absurdities to illustrate absurdities, and we would encourage that. Like more, the solution is actually more speech. And so, like, I think that this is challenging people, and I think that it's really being well received because we live in a society that says you can't talk about those things. You're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to talk about these things. And I think he's challenging it. And let me give you another example of something, a point he makes. And I mean, look, he's, again, I as someone who criticized Jon Stewart, I am sympathetic to, I'm skeptical of the just a comedian defense, just like you are. However, this is something in between. I compare this, say, to George Carlin. Right, who is someone who is engaging in ideas and political ideas in a comedic venue and platform. I do not hold them to the same standards that I would Bill Scheer or Matt Lewis. I do think that there is some artistic license that is certainly a grace that we extend to comedians who are, you know, if nobody's free to be controversial and then who is if comedians can't do it. But he has a joke where he talks about there's a rapper called The Baby. Have you ever heard of The Baby?
I mean, only in the context of the Chappelle story. I wasn't aware of The Baby before.
So like, and Dave Chappelle asserts that The Baby killed somebody in a Walmart in North Carolina. Like, and that actually, I think, is itself not necessarily proven. Well,
I have read that was self-defense and, you know, to call him, I mean, I think the fact that he said homophobic things is not in dispute, but I think the circumstances of that episode could be complicated.
But then The Baby says something perceived as anti-gay. I don't even know what it was, but The Baby got canceled. And Dave Chappelle's point was, and I'll clean this up, but he was like, you can kill somebody in a Walmart and your career will be fine. But if you say something that hurts a gay person's feelings, then you probably will lose your career.
Well,
interesting point.
One, it could be a very specious point because he's not accurately depicting the circumstances of the killing. And they can, these to me aren't jokes. I have consumed happily all sorts of offensive comedic material in my life. And I'm sure I've said plenty of jokes myself, which are inappropriate over the course of my life. So, like, there are ways to do it that, you know, get close to the line, maybe go a little bit over the line, but are done with the intent of trying to make a joke and not actually trying to hurt people. And there's a way to do that is part of the, you know, safe space of comedy, if you will. I mean, you go to any comedy club, you'll see all sorts of offensive things get said. But what you're describing to me there is a political argument that gay people and transgender people have some sort of unfair advantage in society, which to me is, one, not a joke, And I don't really think a very good argument. I mean, if he wants to make the argument, go ahead. But I get to critique the argument too.
Sure.
I get to take your argument and say, you know what, your examples here are, you know, fall apart at close scrutiny. And the fact that you made it slightly humorous in the process doesn't mean it's an extra good point.
Well, his themes also, I mean, his themes, in fairness to Chappelle, you know, he basically talks about how he asserts that white people who become gay try to, like, kind of one up African Americans. Like, that's a common theme of his comedy, that African Americans have had this obviously very difficult struggle, and you could just assert you're gay or you identify as a woman, and now you're somehow in the pecking order, the political, you know, sort of in the whatever, the pecking order one-upmanship of him. And he sort of makes fun of that. He also kind of makes fun of the hypocrisy of kind of like rich, white, progressive women, which I think are a kind of a big target of him as a black man. So, look, I think this is comedy has always had an element that is, I'll use a different trans word, transgressive and edgy. And it used to be that, like, everyone was a target. I mean, certainly, like, country folk, Christians have been targets, Mormons have been, like, everyone used to get to be a target. And then I think what's happened is, like, in the last decade, woke culture has infected society and in the comedy world. And now if there's comedians used to, like, you could make fun of anybody. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, you can't make fun of these people.
Well, you know,
right?
Something about,
and I think he is intentionally challenging those sacred cows and going. And I think what makes it funny, it's weird. Like, basically, like, we are like, it's almost like if you were a kid and you were forced to, like, sit in your chair all day and in school and be proper and listen to your teacher, and then they let you go out to recess, you would, like, jump around if you're a little kid, maybe do things inappropriate. I think that Chappelle is benefiting from the fact that a lot of us feel like there are these very rigid rules, and if you step out of line, they're going to get you. And he is giving a permission structure for the next hour and a half. We can say anything we want. We can say outlandish, ridiculous things, and there's nothing they can do about it because of who I am. I am your savior, in a sense.
Well, here, you know, I said before about, you know, that I've consumed many offensive jokes in my time and probably made offensive jokes in my time. but here's where I think the difference lies. I mean, I'm not saying that everything I've said or consumed is appropriate or should be repeated, but. You know, I'm part Italian, part Jewish. I grew up in a very Jewish area. I heard all sorts of Jewish jokes told by Jews, often the case, in a self-deprecating way. Often the subtext is these stereotypes are ridiculous, that these aren't meant to be stereotypes we want to perpetuate in society. We don't want everyone to believe that Jews are cheap and greedy. But you say the joke as a way to kind of diffuse it and render the stereotype ineffectual. And I think a lot of offensive material in the comedic world, you know, falls along those lines. So for Chappelle is not trying to say a bunch of offensive things about all different groups, so we all kind of feel like we're in this together. We all can laugh at ourselves and move forward together as society. He is literally creating, as you described it, there's a phrase, it's oppression Olympics. Just because people who are gay or transgender have issues of discrimination that they have to deal with means that some of them are trying to be higher in a pecking order than some other group that deals with oppression. I mean, the goal should be to not have an oppression Olympics, to not put people ahead of each other, and to recognize that there's all sorts of forms of discrimination that we want to try to stamp out. He's not telling jokes designed to make people feel like we're all in this together. He is playing groups against other groups. South Park, I think South Park is a great example because they make fun of all sorts of things. I mean, they're playing Mormons that like the Book of Mormon. because even though there are jokes in it about Mormons, it's not designed to say Mormons are bad people.
I think this is more about Mormons, though. Like, Mormons are like, bring it on, make fun of us, we can take it. And I don't think progressives specifically have that attitude. They don't, you know, and here's the thing. You could never make the Book of Mormon about Islam, could you? You wouldn't do that, would you?
I mean, wouldn't want to go there.
Because I mean, you know why? They can't take a joke. I won't use that F word on this show. The response from their community may not be the same as the response from the LDS community.
It depends on the joke, you know? To your point about how woke culture has gotten so out of hand that we can't tell jokes anymore. Well, you know, a joke is only funny if the audience laughs. And if the audience doesn't think
I'm not sure you're right about that, but I'll permit.
I'm not aware of a comedian that can go into a comedy club and get no laughs and be considered a good comedian.
I venture to say that there were people, not my cup of tea, but I've heard tell of like Sam Kinison going into, you know, Mitzi Shore's place and doing exactly that. And
well, but some,
not my cup of tea, but heralded.
Somebody
heralded
somewhere along the lines laughed at Sam Kinison.
People did.
And I went to see Sam Kinison. So I know Sam Kinison. Did Sam Kinison do offensive, obnoxious things? But when I was a teenager and I went to see Sam Kinison live, somebody thought he was funny. And that's why he was a successful comedian. He didn't get no jokes from nobody in his entire career, but was able to be a comedian. You have to know the sensibilities of your audience. And it may be that as we learn and grow and become more empathetic and sympathetic to people who are different than us, that certain jokes just no longer are funny anymore. And that's the burden's on the comedian to think about what is funny in society today. You are able to be funny in today's culture. There are plenty of things in this world that are genuinely funny. There are things that have progressive sentiments that are genuinely funny. Progressives make fun of themselves all the time. It's not that this is a humorless side of the culture, but just because you have to go through an extra level of thought to think, hey, how can I be funny without getting people angry at me because I'm saying something that is not funny and just mean. Not that I'm saying things that's going after a sacred
I think a lot of that stuff was funny, though. And I think a lot of Americans think a lot of the jokes that Chappelle told were funny. And I would also challenge the fact, so right now I would concede the last two Netflix specials have had a theme. And the theme has certainly been, again, I think it's sort of his identity as an African-American man confronting what he calls new gays and the trans community. But I think that it's nuanced. I think, in fact, he tells a pretty heartwarming story about a trans woman friend that he had who he had open up for him. This is a guy, Dave Chappelle's a guy who walked away from tens of millions of dollars from Comedy Central, who did something, I think, pretty gutsy in the sake of artistic freedom. And so I give him some props for doing that, some respect I think he has earned. And look, this is a guy, he does make fun of everybody. And these two specials have been different, but that this is it for that, at least for a while. But, you know, didn't he have a character that, back in the day, that was like a black crackhead. I think that was Chappelle, right? I mean, so
I'm not familiar enough with the Chappelle canon.
You know, he's run the gamut, I think, of making fun of all sorts of people. Certainly white people. There's no doubt about white men who've been in women too. So I don't think that he's on I'll use the term jihad just after a certain group. I think he has been an equal opportunity offender.
Well, do you want to talk debt limit at all before we close out?
Let's do a quick. Why don't you just give us a quick update on where we are in the clickbait world of debt limits and different reconciliation bills?
Well, it just strikes me that we're now in a period where we got a short-term debt limit increase with McConnell's help. And now McConnell said, I'm not going to help you a second time. And Democrats are still saying, well, we're not going to use budget reconciliation to do this. So we seem to be stuck where we were, you know, a month ago. And at the same time, Democrats are trying to pass reconciliation, use reconciliation to pass a multi-trillion dollar spending bill. And they're stuck on that front too. And the two avenues aren't in sync in my mind. I don't understand why Democrats are saying reconciliation makes sense to pass trillions of dollars in social spending, but it's not good to raise the debt limit. I mean, obviously, if it is a legitimate procedural vehicle, then just use it. Use it when you can use it. And why? I mean, I've been hearing all year bipartisanship is a waste of time and it's terrible. But it's okay for the debt limit. Like that's the one thing where bipartisanship is sacrosanct. And I get the argument: well, Republicans ran up this debt; they should have to own it. You know, sure they should. I agree that they should do nice things, but we all know Republicans don't always do nice things. So let's not subject the stability of the global economy on them being nice again. When Democrats can go to reconciliation, they have the time to do it now. Not just raise a debt limit, raise it to an insane number, like one Google dollars or one Googleplex dollars, and we'll never have to deal with this stupid issue ever again. And Democrats can say, hey, America, you elected us because we weren't a bunch of childish idiots who are going to leave Washington in a chronic state of dysfunction. There was a stupid problem. Republicans were making it stupider, and we fixed it.
So it seems like, Bill, that the debt limit did for a time, even though it's been this annoying ordeal we have to go through every once in a while, that it did lead to cuts in spending, right? The sequester, I believe, was the result of that. So there was a time when I think it forced government to actually tighten its belt. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that in recent years, it's become just a more getting us close to the precipice with no positive externalities.
I mean, it's been something that I think there's been a certain degree of gamesmanship with the debt limit for a while. 2011 was the big one when Republicans said, we're not going to do this, Barack Obama, unless you engage in serious deficit reduction.
Yeah.
They created the super committee out of the 2011 debt limit deal, which was supposed to find a negotiated agreement on deficit reduction. And if that was not available, you would do the more ham-fisted sequester, which is what we ended up with.
Yeah, which they thought nobody would ever opt for that, right? But it actually worked.
Yes and no. On one hand, the deficit did go down. And in fact, Obama took credit for the deficit going down. I mean, the deficit as a percentage of GDP was in a pretty good spot by the time he left office in 2016. But the Democrats also took away from 2011, we're never allowing the debt limit to be a political football ever again. We're not going to do concessions over the debt limit ever again. We're only going to do clean debt limits. And that's the end of the discussion. 2013 comes around and Republicans try to use the next debt limit ceiling as a way to stop Obamacare. And Obama says, nope. We are not doing that. There is no way, no how I'm going to let you do that. I mean, there was a government shutdown, as we were running up to the debt limit breach, and Republicans flinched. Not only did they flinch, they agreed to have a new set of budget negotiations, which led to a rollback of the sequester, which was the Ryan Murray agreement in December of 2013. So there still was some deficit reduction, but it wasn't as severe as what was initially envisioned. Democrats have retained the lesson that we are not going to negotiate the debt limit. We're not going to have concessions around the debt limit, something which did just happen. McConnell didn't take a concession. It was a clean debt limit increase. And Democrats have the ability to stick to that by themselves if they did it in reconciliation and end this problem forevermore.
Well, look, I think that the debt limit, when it was being used, as a mechanism to try or an impetus to cut the deficit, that's a good thing. I think trying to get rid of Obamacare was obviously not an appropriate or effective means of leverage.
I mean, I certainly, I mean, the debt limit, as people who will pay attention know, is not about really future spending. It's about taking care of past spending. Obviously, you can raise it to a level where it would deal with some future spending. But the immediate issue is making sure you're paying for past obligations. And once you are looping in other issues into that, you're going to be seen as the provocateur and the agitator, and you're not going to have the leverage you think you have. Now, this is going a little bit sideways here, but you know, we're also seeing with the Democrats' reconciliation package, the Build Back Better bill, progressives thinking, okay, we're going to take the infrastructure bill hostage. And when we take that hostage, we're going to have more leverage over this broader package. That was 2 weeks ago, and still Manchin and Sinema have the lion's share of the leverage. We're talking about how to make them happy. How low is this number going to be to make them happy? How are we going to structure drug prices and climate and child tax credit to make them happy? When I talk about this on social media, you know, the response I get from progressives is, well, they would have killed it altogether if we didn't do this. Which, you know, if you want to tell yourself that, go ahead. There's no stated position of any moderate, with the exception of Kurt Schrader in the House. Kurt Schrader is the only guy I've seen say, all right, I don't want reconciliation at all. But he's one guy in the House, not enough to actually kill the bill. Manchin's never said that. Sinema's never said that. Josh Gottheimer's never said that. And I'm used to progressives complaining that Democrats get hosed in negotiations. You started here and you ended up here. Clearly you played a bad hand. And now we're on the verge of seeing, you know, Bernie's opening bid of $6 trillion get knocked back to around two. And progressives are probably going to say that if that happens, well, at least we didn't get zero, which, hey, that's a pragmatic attitude, which I have respect for. But don't tell me that it means that the tactics you used were strong tactics. You should have enough ability for reflection to say, you know what, maybe the thing that I thought was going to give me leverage didn't actually give me the leverage that I expected it to. And maybe next time around, I should think about a different strategy, just like Republicans shouldn't think about and haven't. After they did get beat on the 2013 debt limit showdown, they haven't tried. McConnell hasn't tried that tactic again because it didn't work. I mean, McConnell's basically said, hey, Democrats, raise the debt limit all you want. Just leave us out of it, which is a different attitude than what Ted Cruz was trying to do in 2013.
Or as George Carlin might say, do what you want to the girl, but leave me alone.
Is that a Carlin quote?
That was under the rubric of things you never hear. He had a whole thing. Here's some things you never hear. Do what you want to the girl, but leave me out of it.
See, that joke is funny because it's ridiculous. He's not saying you should be allowed to sexually assault women.
Well, I think some of what Chappelle is thrown out there is, you know, he's not necessarily all literal, Bill.
But the cases you show me, he is being literal. That's my point.
Yeah.
If he was not being literal and just be sort of gleefully offensive, I would treat it differently. But he is being literal there.
But Carlin did the same thing. I mean, there were parts where Carlin really was making. Anyway, let's not fight for the children. Let's avoid. This is why we rarely talk about the culture war stuff, right? We're in our safe space now with the debt ceiling. And so anyway, sadly, I have to go write another column. Maybe we should move the day we do this. I usually write on Thursdays. So lately I've been bumping up against my writing ceiling, my writing limit. But, you know, Bill, sadly, I think you and I both cannot do the DM Zoom this Friday, but we have already, through the magic of our Google Calendar, we've already scheduled a week from this Friday. So whatever the day, I don't know, October such and such, we will do a DM Zoom, one of our conversations. Next week.
Next week. Next week. Yes.
It's on the books. It's been scheduled. Barring some, you know, extreme unforeseen event, we will do it.
All righty. Next week.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at DMZ Show. You can support us on Patreon. Check out the YouTube, youtube.com/Matt Lewis. My interviews. Got some exciting ones coming up too, Bill. So stay tuned for that. And what do you want to plug?
I had a piece in the monthly arguing for Democrats to jack up the debt limit to Googleplex. And I will have something coming. I got to finish writing it, but I will do something about progressive tactics in this bill and whether they are working out as intended. So that should be coming out. My guess is I'll probably get published on Monday.
All right. Well, another exciting show, and we'll see you back here in the DMZ next week.
All right. Take care.